And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Happy New Year, and welcome to episode 13 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite Review Show here at the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me today, we're back to the three-man booth, Chris and Lawrence. Chris, Lawrence, how are you?
I'm pretty good. It's an interesting start to the new year with Dynamite coming tonight with some pretty crazy things that have happened in the last couple weeks since Dynamite has aired.
For the magic of editing, we're actually doing this on we're doing this segment of it on the afternoon, so beforehand, and then you know obviously we will watch Dynamite and then record later, because again, through the magic of editing, this is how are made, folks.
Yeah, we decided to save ourselves the trouble and actually go to sleep at a reasonable hour on the first day of our Naito 2020.
Oh, so. Yeah, that's right. Because, I know I have to work tomorrow. I don't know about, I'm sure I'm sure you two do as well, so. Yeah. I mean, hell, Lawrence, you had to work today, so, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I fell asleep at, 10 o'clock with my girlfriend, and we, wake up, and we almost missed the ball drop. Like, we woke up at, 11:30, and we were like, oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
I didn't even have booze. That's the sad part. I just fell asleep.
Rip in pieces, my man.
Yeah,
rip in pieces.
Adulting be hard, you know?
Is this what happens when you get old, Jeff?
Yes. Pretty much.
Oh, God.
I hate it.
All right, so what we want to talk about, because this is going to take about 15, 20 minutes of our lives here. What we want to talk about is what's going on with AEW in the 2 weeks between tonight and December the 18th, the last show of the year. Just to get this out of the way, did either of you watch Dark in the?
I saw the results,
Jeff, you know the answer. You know the answer to this, Jeff.
Yeah, because I didn't either, so.
Yeah, I decided to not suffer for it this week around, and it seemed like it was a good call. Sorry for anyone who was looking forward to any Dark coverage in depth from us this time about this ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, during the holiday period, I just couldn't be bothered, so. All right. So here's what's gone down since then. Long story short, the ending segment on AEW Dynamite episode 12 from Corpus Christi basically got bullocked up and down the internet, despite the fact that Chris and I were fully on board with the fact that we actually kind of like the segment because we're into the whole Dark Order angle. But I mean, we're also objective enough to know that, yeah, it didn't really get over. Well, since then, the certain members of the executive vice presidents took it kind of hard and decided to leave Twitter in the wake of the criticism of it.
Kept their Instagram, though.
Yeah, amazing. They ditched their Twitter and kind of looked like a-holes for it, too, because, we'll get into it. I just want to get your guys' thoughts on this. Let's go with Lawrence, because we haven't heard from him in a while. So,
oh, God. Well, I mean, where do you begin? really? I mean, this is what we're doing now? This is really what we're doing now. Anything that takes slight criticism on your program, and you're going to go run away off of Twitter? That's how we're handling this as, supposed execs of a company? Oh my God. It's embarrassing to me. It's embarrassing. It's really just they're children. They're literal, almost like children. These two.
Yeah, and the one thing, on that note, when they decided to bring their kids into it, this is time away from our kids and families. You know what?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was one of the, Yeah, obviously, I had to have a screenshot for the block because, you know, Nick Jackson blocked me a while ago. But I still don't even know what it was that got that handed me the block. But anyway, the point is that I get real sick and tired of them bringing their families into every decision. It's like, okay, you know what? You're not the only wrestlers with kids and families.
That's I just social media, really. Twitter?
Yeah.
That's taking time away from your kids?
Yeah.
That sounds like a you problem, not a, yeah. a Twitter problem.
As I'm sure you guys know from my experience, you know, for knowing me, is like, you know what, I'm not going to dismiss anybody saying that, you know, getting off of Twitter is helpful for their mental health.
this came at a coincidental time, didn't it?
it really does seem like they were just trying to avoid getting the bollocking they were getting.
It's like, yeah, all you got to say is like, hey man, we kind of know it didn't, you know, come off the way like it probably was really wanted to, so like we'll work on it. Instead, you go and like do that. Like, that's just, how does that look? I mean, to the locker room, how does that look to, you know, people that, you know, are basically working under you? I mean, I don't know. I just don't like the optics of that at all. If I'm like working for AEW, I'm like, really? That's like, these guys are execs of this company? Like, I don't know about that. Like,
yeah. I mean, Chris, I mean, feel free to jump in here anytime.
I just think the situation boils down to Matt and Nick specifically have to realize that they're not just pro wrestlers anymore. They can't just block and mute their problems on Twitter anymore when it comes to this stuff. They have to handle themselves like executive vice presidents. There's got to be some level of accountability that isn't just the typical pro wrestler approach of, oh, you don't like what I'm doing? Well, I'm just going to block you and your opinion no longer is relevant. This is your viewing audience that you're talking to at this point. These are the people that, you know, drive this whole ratings war that you all try to push off as something that's not important, but clearly it's still a big enough deal to a lot of people out there, even though we ourselves don't subscribe to that train of thought. It's the worst possible way that you could handle this. And when you have a company that's as young as AEW, and which has had its questionable share of decisions already, depending on who you talk to and depending on what you're looking at, even with the good, some bad has come, it's just not a good look for them heading into the end of the year and into a hiatus in which more things eventually drop with a certain YouTube video that the two of them and a certain other executive vice president were involved in, which we really do need to take a moment to discuss this too, guys.
Oh yeah, we totally do. But I mean, yeah, I mean, this is how we're at after 12 weeks of TV.
Weeks. We actually kind of talked about this off air. And just, you know, ownership in general and pro sports world and you know, and just in general, I mean, it really, the morale of a whole company can really start at the top and just how everything operates, and people really take on the personality of, you know, in the company of those people. And this, I think, just reflects badly on the people underneath, like we were saying. And I mean, you know, you have like guys like, And here's why the New York Knicks have been bad for so long. James Dolan blocks out, the owner of the Knicks, blocks out pretty much any and all criticism that comes his way, owning the Knicks, and insulates himself. And what do you know? It's like they've been the worst basketball team in the NBA for the past decade plus. I mean,
yeah.
And that's not the path these guys want to start going on.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I mentioned that too, and I say this on one of my other shows all the time, the Busting Balls podcast, is that the ownership of Arsenal clearly does not give a crap, and it shows on the pitch. You know, the results show on the pitch. Although, you know, as we're recording, they're currently beating Manchester United 2-0. But, you know, that's beside that's another case of an ownership who clearly doesn't care. Because, you know, Manchester United, they're owned by, you know, the Glazer family down in Tampa. You know, the Buccaneers owners. They don't care. They're making money. That's all they care about, you know? But, yeah, I mean, I see that. But, I mean, it's not just ownership, too, though. Because ownership actually seems to be still kind of, you know, gung-ho about this. It's the other it's you know, again, the executive vice presidents.
I shouldn't say ownership. Yeah, obviously,
yeah, it's the upper mid card, basically.
Tony Khan is not innocent in this at all either.
He isn't, but he doesn't really apply to this particular situation where you have, you know, as Chris mentioned, you know, there are a video released of the aforementioned executive vice presidents Matt and Nick Massey and Kenny Omega, and they are sitting around and they are just actively slagging off New Japan and Ring of Honor for alleged disrespect and basically kicking us out and all this. I'm like, okay.
Boy, they sure think the world owes them fucking everything, don't they? Holy.
Yeah. I'm just going to say because all three of us were involved in this time period on the Strong Style Story podcast, the points at which the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega were at the top of New Japan was about the point that Lawrence left the show.
Yeah, remember that one podcast in which we thought we legit were going to get fired from our former network of hosts because of how actively we were shitting on everything?
including each other.
Yeah. It was not a fun time in New Japan in general, and just, again, the biggest issue here is just, literally trying to pass the buck as if it's somebody else's problem. It's business that got done. New Japan realized that, hey, they had plans for this America expansion even as far back as last year. They just didn't get to announcing it until, like, or rather 2018, since we are on the first day of 2020. But they announced that stuff in 2019, and three of the guys that were within their roster that had contact with just about everybody in their roster at this point basically saying, yeah, we're leaving and starting a new company in America. Of course New Japan is just going to go, yeah, fuck you guys. We're not doing anything with you at this point anymore. You can just go away and do your thing after January 4th.
Well, it's not even just that. It's that, you know, there is some outright fabrication because Kenny Omega was saying that, you know, they changed the storyline on us of, you know, it was supposed to be a 50-50 battle between Tanahashi and Omega over, the soul of New Japan. It's like, Kenny, we watched your freaking entrance video. You're the one who changed the storyline.
Yeah, it's like you're actively shitting on the active president of the company within that video, and you're going to try to act as if, you're in the right on this one. And here's the thing. As much as Kenny has done the work within the years in Japan and has become, you know, has familiarized himself with the culture and all of that, at the end of the day, it's, you know, dorky foreigner who's enamored with the country against the ace of the company who saved them from the brink of actual extinction. Who the fuck do you think is going to get sheared in that?
Yeah,
seriously.
Well, and also, you know, the way that the Bucks have comported themselves in that whole situation is absolutely hilarious, considering the Bucks were not over outside of Tokyo. And we have ample video evidence of this.
We have hammered this point time and time again, and the video will not lie regarding it either. So,
you know, all this being said, you know, the relationship with Ring of Honor is whatever, because as far as I'm concerned, I still think that Sinclair is the one who bankrolled All In, and I think I have plenty of evidence for that.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
like, you know, the fact that their pre-show was only on, a Sinclair channel that just so happened to be out of Chicago. Yeah. Yep. But, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, there's the other situation here, which is one hand doesn't seem to know what the other hand's doing, or there are two distinct factions already growing within All Elite, because now we have the news, it's been made official on both ends, that if Hiroshi Tanahashi beats Le Champion on January the 5th at the Tokyo Dome, Tanahashi has the right and will be owed an AEW world title shot.
Yeah, this was an interesting development, seeing the whole deal with, AEW is not going to work with New Japan and this and that.
Yeah.
So my thing is with this is, what and here's what I think is going to happen. I think that Tana will beat Jericho in Japan. And then I think what's going to happen is, I don't think it's going to be an AEW title match in America. I think it's going to be another match between the two in Japan, which obviously Jericho will probably
really okay
win.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that.
That's what I think is going to be the case. Unless they just have Tana lose, but I kind of doubt that. It doesn't really make a whole load of sense. Unless this was really just Jericho's way of, just gathering intrigue. And just, he said, let's throw this stip on, just to kind of...
Tanahashi's the one who started it in that Tokyo Sports interview.
Right. And, but then obviously Jericho had to, go along with it too. So, I think it's one of those things I'm a little like, I'm on the fence about. I don't know. I think though that my thought is, I think they're going to do a match. If Tana wins, I think they're going to do the title match in New Japan.
Well, be that as it may, I mean, the point is that it's just, we have two distinct groups going on in AEW now. When you have Jericho and apparently, at least in kayfabe, Tony Khan is all about bringing in Hiroshi Tanahashi and a New Japan, a New Japan talent. And also, let's not forget, John Moxley is willing to play ball in New Japan too.
Yeah.
Which means New Japan is also willing to play ball with AEW.
Yeah. My thing is, I just don't see New Japan going, oh yeah, we're going to let Tana lose in America to Jericho.
I mean, they could.
I think they would mind. They wouldn't mind it as much over, in Japan. I just don't know if they want to send him over to America, all the flight, just to, for him to lose over in America. I don't know.
Well, again, this is kind of superfluous to the point right now, which is the point is that there already seems to be factionalizing in the office of AEW, and we're 12 weeks into TV.
I see what you're saying. Sorry. I wasn't really like understanding what you were
saying. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, was that it's just behind this is indicative of there's something going on behind the scenes where part of the company is not talking to another part of the company.
Yeah, I think I know who that is and who that isn't. And yeah, it seems like Cody is kind of distancing himself a little bit from those guys.
Yeah, I mean, well, at least on screen anyway, but I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah, Cody Rhodes has, he's bringing Arn Anderson to be part of his on-screen product, which, okay, that's kind of whatever. But, I mean, at the same time, and then there's, the other thing that we needed to mention is that, as of right now, as we record this, an advertised match will not be happening because somebody didn't think to check with one of the talents involved to see what their bookings were.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And now we have a promised match between Riho and Chris Statlander not going to happen until next week.
This is bad. I'm sorry, but this is bad on their part. I mean, like, this is minor league shit.
I mean, and to make it more infuriating is that so Hikaru Shida is part of the match. Okay, great. She's probably earned it. But, you also bring in Nyla Rose, who is fine, but has already had a shot at this title and was kayfabe suspended.
Right, yeah. This
until
is
the beginning of the year, which I get that, but at the same time, it's still one of those, odd call to make. And then, of course, there's Britt Baker.
Britt Baker, we're going back to this again.
Oh, my God.
So,
and here's the thing. The worst part is that I actually feel bad for the performance in question, because even, you know, as much as we have ragged on Britt Baker accordingly on this show, and there's record of that at this point, like, none of them deserve the flack overall that they're getting because of front office incompetence.
I'm not blaming any of the wrestlers involved for this whatsoever. This is on the booking, and this is on, you know, the matchmakers who didn't think to see if Chris Statlander had any outstanding commitments or a newly signed contract, like, you know, any other company maybe would do.
Right. Like, and then, you know, then you work it out beforehand, you know, and you go talk to Bar Wrestling at that point and go, hey, you know, maybe we can, you know, move her to another show date or something like that. But you know, now you're stuck and you don't want to, now they don't want to look like the asshole. They don't want to look like the dicks, like, you know, WWE. So they're going, oh, okay, well, we'll bend to them and we'll just gonna, you know, we'll throw this together. And it just looks, it's all a mess. It's a big mess.
And
then they get Joey Ryan too, which is just ugh, in bad form.
Okay, but that, you know what, that is professionalism, but they shouldn't have opened their mouths about the match to begin with, is if they weren't absolutely sure that this match was going to happen. And we get that the card is subject to change.
This is a big match for a big show.
Yeah, this was one of the marquee, hey, it's the first match, you know, the first, you know, women's title defense of the year, literally on the first day of, you know, a new decade. We can't do that because we pulled a whoopsie, you know.
They had an opportunity to turn some heads from the college bowl games today, and now it's like, uh-oh, that's the one less thing that they got to draw people away from that.
Yeah, so in any event, I just thought we needed to take a little bit of time at the beginning of the show to discuss. Yeah, there's obviously a lot of chaos going on in backstage, but I guess we're going to find out here in a little bit, in a matter of hours, whether or not that affects the on-screen product at all. And yes, we know that NXT won the ratings the last 2 weeks. Well, yeah, number one, NXT AEW didn't run last week on Christmas, but you know, maybe they did deservedly, you know, win the ratings last Wednesday. But, you know, again, you know, ratings aren't always indicative of quality, but sometimes they are. So
it's that's a very, very good point, Jeff. Very good point. But I tell you, Cody really wanted AEW to be like WCW, but I don't think he wanted it to be like in this way.
Like the Russo era WCW.
I don't think this was the WCW he envisioned for AEW, because this is like the bad parts of WCW really starting to shine through here with the backstage disagreement and just kind of managerial incompetence and just really just messing up.
Yeah, but I mean, it is a new year. It's a new year. It's, you know, New Year's Day. Let's go into this episode of Dynamite with an open mind, and we will report on that. So I had to go find some audio of, you know, the lilting harp music that they do for flashbacks and stuff, you know, where you do a time change. So I had to find that real quick, and then we'll be right back with a review of episode 13 of AEW Dynamite. So stick around.
Flashback to the future.
And we are live at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, Florida for episode 13 of AEW Dynamite. Your commentators tonight, Jim Ross, Excalibur, and the visiting Taz filling in for Tony Schiavone, who I can only guess is probably doing something with the Georgia Bulldogs because this is bowl season.
Yes, sir.
So we start the episode with an opening video of basically the Elite blowing themselves on camera.
You can't see it, but this is me shaking my head right now.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. You know, coming off of, you know, the discussion we just had, yeah. Anyway, I mean, it was what it was, but let's face it, it was the elite, you know, congratulating themselves, basically. You know.
Yeah.
But at least we cut right into a match, and this time, we have Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes going up against Darby Allin, the return match from their draw at, what was it, Fighter Fest? They had
yes, it was Fighter Fest.
So this is what happens when you have two events like right next to each other and they have similar names.
Oh yeah, you know?
they do blur, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, Cody Rhodes comes out with Arn Anderson as his manager or handler now. Wouldn't this have made more sense during the Shawn Spears feud?
Yeah, but, you know, hindsight is 2020, I guess?
I mean, you know, I don't know that Arn came out and did the spine buster during that match, but, I mean, that would have been the perfect counterpoint to the whole Tully Blanchard thing.
Yeah, this kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. I'm never opposed to having more Arn Anderson on my television.
Yeah,
please don't get this twisted.
And we like Tully just fine too. It's just
Spears was the only problem we had with that entire thing, and this is coming from somebody who doesn't like Cody more often than not. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was the timing on this was a little strange. I will say that, like, because like Jeff said, it kind of probably would have made a little more sense if they did it during like the whole Shawn Spears thing they had going on, and might have ignited things a little bit more. I mean, as much as you could with that guy, but
So Lawrence, tell us about this match.
Well, I mean, I missed a little bit of it at the beginning because I was talking to my dad when it started, but. Man, from what I saw, this was pretty darn good. It's just a lot of really cool spots in this. I liked a lot of I thought Darby kicking out of the crossroads was huge.
Yeah, big deal.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, and they traded a couple of spots between each other that played back to the stuff that they did on Fighter Fest as well. There was a little bit of that too, which was nice. The coffin drop onto the apron looked
pretty
gnarly on top of it as well. I did kind of like how the announcers weren't sure from the camera angles that whether it was Cody that got the knees up or was just the move's nature being so bad that it messed them both up, which either way, however you interpret it, it still hurt everybody involved regarding it. So, but the biggest thing here being that at one point, Darby had exposed one of the turnbuckles earlier in the match while on the offense. That came back into play as Cody ran into said turnbuckle when Darby got out of the way of it. Ends up getting Cody dead to rights on position for the coffin drop, but then Arn gets on the apron, not to like interfere with Aubrey or anything, but literally like telling him to raise his knees up. And, well, Cody does that as Darby comes down on him basically gets finished off from there, rolling through, and good old schoolboy gets it done. Cody gets the victory on that. And it keeps Darby strong in the fact that obviously he kicked out of Crossroads to begin with, and it shows that it took Arn coaching him up a little bit to get past him, which
They put him over being there as being important, which I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
I did notice that they've reset the win-loss records for the year.
Yeah, they are still showing the overall records for people. That has been shown on the graphics. But yeah, apparently for this new year, they're taking it the 2020 records going forward. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes a little bit of sense. I mean, if they're going to go through this conceit, then, you know, you can't have a cumulative record. I guess that's what they do for real fighters. But I mean, if you're going to consider that, you know, they're treating this as like a season or whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the problem is eventually it gets to the point where you get even some of the best guys become like 50-50 after a couple of years. So this is a good way of going, hey, here are the overall records for these guys, but this year this is what they've done compared to like previous things. So it's a good adjustment to an idea that didn't seem like it was going to go into that was going to run into some major snags down the line kind of thing. So good adjustment by them in that regard.
Okay, next up, we have the AEW Women's Title match, four-way match between...
Before that, though, we did have SCU doing that interview in the back, your favorites, Jeff.
Maybe that's why I blocked it out of my mind.
And then Sammy Guevara came up and basically called Christopher Daniels old.
And it sets up a match for next week. So it was at least short, quick, and to the point, which I'm fine with.
But. I'll tell you what, Sammy has been watching his old Chris Jericho tapes because we're gonna be talking about this a little more a little later in the show. But God, I mean, it really seems like he's taken on the personality of 20s Chris Jericho.
He's been watching his Nitro and Thunder episodes. Yeah.
Oddly enough, so have Chris and I. So, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Following that promo, then we have the AEW Women's Title four-way match between Champion Riho and an opponent, Hikaru Shida, Britt Baker, and Nyla Rose. We already discussed how all three of us were kind of nonplussed that, you know, they took an advertised match and changed it because AEW's management failed to consider somebody else's booking schedule. Chris, the match itself.
The match itself, it definitely started off with a bang as Nyla Rose actually blindsided Riho before the bell even rang to begin with. Took out Britt Baker immediately after, but then Hikaru Shida came at her with the kendo stick, which was our first time seeing her actually use it, which good stuff all around. Match got started after that. Honestly, the four of them managed to put something together really well considering the short notice that they had to do this with and given the circumstances. I thought they did some really good bits and pieces there. Nyla looks as imposing as absolutely ever. That guillotine knee is still just a thing of beauty outright. And the senton through the table into Shida as well.
Oh my God, she just crushed her. Yeah. I love Nyla, man. She mm-hmm. is fucking awesome. She is one of the building blocks, I think, of this whole division. And they need to continue
outright.
Continue mm-hmm. to be. And I unfortunately almost hope that, you know, Awesome Kong just doesn't come in here and just kind of like, you know, takes it all with the whole Brandi Rhodes thing going on, because I think they got something going here with with these girls, and I just think that might be a bad momentum stopper. But I don't know, man. Nyla's just killing it right now. She's just very, like you said, she's very imposing, and just her like wrecking everybody's shit at every constant mm-hmm. turn is just.
Yeah, I think it displayed a lot of people's strengths in the fact that it showed Hikaru Shida and Riho as being extremely resilient, regardless of whatever was getting thrown at them. And I think to an extent, it even showed Britt Baker as being crafty with picking her spots and nearly getting a couple of falls here and there, too.
Oh, so, you're very kind, Chris.
But, for once, but...
yeah, we're going to have more to talk about that later. However, in the end, Riho retains the AEW Women's title. And now, next week, we will get the match we were promised for tonight. Had, you know, anybody bothered to check up with Chris Statlander, see what she was doing tonight.
Yeah, Riho won with another kind of like a flash pin. And this
Jackknife hold, I believe, is what it was. Something
Yeah, jackknife pin on Britt Baker. And Baker will have something to say about this in a little bit. But, yeah, so Riho, in the end, kind of with the trend of that's how she kind of wins. And, after the match is a whole other story with Nyla Rose.
Yeah, Nyla just decided to go, fuck it, table. What do you mean table? Wham.
Yeah, man, so she crushes Riho. So My thing, I think what they're doing here is they're protecting Riho for a loss next week. That screamed to me, okay, she's losing the title next week to Stat. Because that's usually a go to, like, hey, you know, she's kinda hurt, she's banged up, maybe she won't be able to be as resilient, you know, next week. So either way, it could be, she wins and she looks even more resilient because of it. I kinda doubt it though. It just feels like Statlander is ready to take this title.
It could be, but it also could be a situation too where unfortunately we see the Brandy and Kong stuff for a night costing Statlander the title. Yeah. But I also would be okay with that because, as you mentioned, it kind of keeps them, kind of keeps the Nightmare Collective girls out of the particular picture and lets Riho kind of sort her stuff out with the other people within that division. Although I do have to think that we'll get into this a little bit later on because there's a point that has to be made regarding that as well. So let's move forward for now.
I wonder if this would set up probably another Nyla and Riho match too. Pretty soon in the near future, I'm sure. So
yeah, that's the one thing is that, you know, that they put Nyla and Britt in this, and we said this at the top of the show too, but I mean it's just like, okay, they've already been in this match before.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
Like this is what Britt's what, third?
Oh,
go
no.
with this, I think. Maybe only second. It's definitely Nyla's second go.
It's like, boy, they're already running out of names here. It's pretty irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, considering
evident.
Yeah, considering some of the other women that they brought in. I mean, okay, let me start cycling some other people into this title picture. I mean, it was great that they had Hikaru Shida in there, but I mean, after they went through this big song and dance about Hikaru Shida getting upset and then Chris Statlander, you know, beating Britt Baker, and then they get the match anyway.
Yeah.
Because somebody was a dumbass and didn't check the schedule, you know?
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, when you consider just the women's roster portion of things, it's not like we're getting the guests from the DDTs and TJPWs of the world coming through every couple of weeks here. So you've got to find a way of probably starting to work, the girls like Shanna and Sadie Gibbs and even Bree Priestley, like working
Small.
Into the picture. That too. Absolutely.
Yeah. And let's face it, I'm also really convinced that for whatever reason that they decided to sit on Awesome Kong for a while, I get the feeling that Awesome Kong really was the original one filling the Nyla Rose role because, I mean, it's like Nyla is doing the Awesome Kong bit better right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
I do not disagree with that. I really don't.
But and now that Chris has mentioned, Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling, I'm really just hoping eventually for Maki Ito to come into AEW and just start cussing up a storm.
Oh, she's going to be a star if she comes over.
Yeah.
I assure you this, and I with little doubt that Maki Ito will be an immediate star.
It's a presence, basically, is what it
just,
is, even if
she
the wrestling isn't
it.
There. Yeah.
She just, oh, yeah.
She just gets it. I mean, she just gets the whole spiel. I mean, it's obvious she's going to be headed for very, very big things at some point in the near future.
So we got a backstage segment with Joey Janela. Lawrence, let us in on this.
How much did they pay Joey to do this? my question.
Honestly, knowing Joey Janela, that was probably his idea.
Oh, that was the rumblings before that. He didn't really want to do this. So I think they eventually, there was rumblings earlier, like a month or so back, that they pitched this to him and he didn't really want to do this with Penelope. But, yeah, so I don't know what changed his mind.
That is interesting, given the fact that even after they broke up in shoot, that they still worked together doing the managerial. She was still his manager there for a little while after the initial breakup. But I guess it makes a little more sense now, knowing that Kip is in the company as well too, and then having to work with the both of them now. It's kind of a okay. I could see how that would be a little
awkward.
Yeah, to say the least.
I mean, yeah, that. But yeah, Janela. Yeah, so Marvez is trying to interview Janela, and he went to speak, and then
gets low blown by Penelope Ford.
Penelope Ford just snuck up behind him and hit him in the nuts. So that was interesting. And Sabian's there too, and they were laughing at him. It was like, oh, geez.
Shoot, brothers.
Yeah.
Bad boy fight.
I'm curious. I'm morbidly curious in this. I mean, I think this could be something interesting. You got some legit real life spark here, and sometimes that leads to some really interesting matches. So you know, it could be pretty cool.
And to me too, I think Janela works really well with a lot of these like younger guys that don't have like the, I guess, full-fledged like resume, and they're still kind of working their way up. He could help elevate Kip considerably if the matches are even half decent in front of a hot crowd. I think they could do some stuff for pushing a guy that I think AEW is big on. They just haven't figured out a place for him yet. Because, to be honest though, it's kind of weird in terms of like Kip Sabian's like, oh, he's from Brit Rest, but then you realize, oh yeah, that scene got raided like 2 years ago, and everybody else who's left there either just isn't up to par, or they just don't want to do anything that's big budget at this point, as David Starr has demonstrated at this point.
And now the IPW UK titles and Noah.
Yep. Oh boy. Moving back to America for a second. We get into our third match, in which we have Trent Beretta against the one, the only, John freaking Moxley.
This was good, man.
This was so good.
Great match.
I love again, this match.
Again, proof of how good Trent is in singles, a match like this one will just continue to prove it, and even prove what New Japan was kind of starting to see in him, trying to give him a heavyweight singles run before sticking him in tags for like 3 months, and then remembering, oh yeah, he's a singles guy. Let's try that again.
They were just throwing bombs at each other in this.
Yeah, it was super good.
Yeah, they were, and some of the best parts I thought about this match, first of all, Jon Moxley does a dodon that would have made Ryusuke Taguchi really proud.
Yeah, that was no coincidence.
and furthermore, Jon Moxley actually outdid Orange Cassidy.
Oh, man. The finger guns in the pocket.
Oh, yeah. If this is not proof that, I mean, we had the two most over guys in AEW in the ring together, and Moxley came out the better one for it.
Oh my God. Legends only club right there.
Yeah.
And furthermore, we're going to see him twice this weekend, brothers. I'm telling you right now.
Can't wait. I'm stoked. Let's do this.
All right. So go. Following a Death Rider onto Trent Beretta, we get Sammy Guevara coming in, stealing people's concessions and really
channeling his 97, 98 Jericho right there, too.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and then we get a message from the real thing, the real Jericho. A pre-tape promo, obviously.
God, this is...
This was great. That is a pretty nice car, except I don't like Fords, so, you know, I'm sorry.
He offered him an executive vice president title.
That was the best part of that. Especially given what we just discussed earlier. Oh, my God. That was awesome.
It's like, boy, you ain't slick.
And but that 49%, is 49% of Inner Circle LLC.
Yeah. This was a great promo. A little disappointed that, you know, Mox decided to say, I'll give my answer next week. Obviously, because he's going to have some meetings with Jericho, because they both are going to take the same plane to Tokyo this weekend, right?
Yeah.
I would have been surprised if Jericho's already there.
Right, Jericho's already there.
My God.
Jericho's apparently smart already man. There. Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding.
Smart,
okay.
Smart man. Yeah. Smart man. Yeah, he smart left man. Early. That's why they do the pre-tape.
Yeah.
So how about, and then continuing with Sammy Guevara during the commercial break, he has these cue cards on him, with the, He runs through everything. He even at one point asked out Victoria Justice's sister.
I saw that. Yeah, he's doing the Bob Dylan shtick again. You know, the subterranean homesick blues thing.
I mean, he realizes it's the commercial and they're doing picture in picture. So, again, Sammy Guevara's maximizing his minutes, which props to him, honestly. Like, that's as good of a way to do it as any.
Oh, hell yeah. No, I can't hate on that at all. I mean, if we're going to have these stupid picture in picture commercial breaks, then yeah, why not? I mean, dude, he's working with the format because there's no audio.
Yep.
So, you know, he's working with the format, and that's brilliant. He's adapted. That's why he's going to go far eventually. Huh. So, but when we come back from the picture-in-picture, we get Sammy Guevara in the ring waiting for Dustin Rhodes. And, this match was a bit of all right, too.
Yeah.
Up to an included Canadian Destroyer on the fucking apron by Dustin Rhodes.
Sammy died. Because, well, that's what he tends to do in his matches. But I did like the fact that after, you know, the months of, or rather the weeks of waiting on the broken arm and stuff to heal up, and given that the Inner Circle did that to him, Dustin sneaking up on Guevara and just beating the tar off of him from the get-go is perfect writing. Great way to start the match. Again, keeps you on your toes. Sammy got to show out a little bit, which was good along with that. And, of course, the Canadian Destroyer on the apron being what it was. And then, of course, at the end of the day, a large man appears, or as we like to call him, the most expensive dick kneeing machine in the biz today.
The mega chud known as Jake Hager.
He ran out of 16-year-olds to pick on. So, you know, he had to come back here again.
Yeah, draw a paycheck.
Yeah.
Are we going to mention how much of Sammy Guevara's ass we saw?
Oh, my.
I mean, that was an unfortunate wedgie that he got there, but I guess there's something for everyone in the fandom, and I'm sure there's a corner of AEW fandom that are fanning themselves over
it. I was just saying, offering that without comment, that's all.
That was a lot of cheek right there.
That was pretty cheeky of him, but
Dustin smacked him on the ass too, just to like.
Yeah, he kind of went back a ways.
man's almost showing their whole ass on live TV.
Well, he was also going for Shattered Dreams too. So I was like, oh man, this is great.
Yeah, but in the end, we get the thing that brought us down was we get a fuck finish in the end. But of course, you know, this is how the feud continues on TV. You know, it's striking me how much of, watching AEW Dynamite these 13, 14 weeks, considering how I'm used to how New Japan and All Japan and indie promotions are structured, you know, in their matches, and then going back to American TV wrestling. Is like night and day, you know? Yes, we need a fuck finish in this match because this is what, you know, builds the feud up, but, you know, it's still irritating because we have a fuck finish, you know?
It's you know, I mean, I don't know. I have mixed emotions on that. It's they're two different types of, you know, products.
No, I get that, but, I mean, it's just, you know, having been away from the WWE, you know, WWF, really.
In particular. Yeah.
Yeah. This is more jarring than most people. Like for Lawrence and I, we're just like, we're used to this at this point.
This is nothing.
Yeah. For me, it's just like, it's still like, you know, I'm still having to navigate, you know.
I mean, there wasn't a wedding on this one, though, so.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we're burying the final segment of Dynamite 2 weeks ago, I'm really glad that the last Raw of the year had a very buryable segment too, from all accounts. So.
Funny thing is, it was like one of their most watched segments in like quite some time. So I mean, they got the tastemakers, I guess.
Get Rusev out of there some way somehow, please. Well, he deserves better.
Rusev for G1. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. That,
hell
that,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So from there, just to move back into AEW business, we did have a quick bit in between Private Party trying to talk about their New Year's resolutions for 2020 while at a bar setting, drinking it up, having fun, you know, Private Party stuff. When Hangman Adam Page just rolls up, you know, literally just grabs a glass, grabs a drink, tells them both to fuck off, and basically says he can beat both their asses at the same time kind of thing before walking off with his drink, which...
Is this like a callback to the Scott Hall angle in WCW?
I don't know.
I'm wondering.
Like, what the fuck? What is this? They, like, made it a very, like, much so to point out the, like, has been drinking.
Has been drinking, yes.
Has like, a glass in his hand. Are they gonna go with, like... Like, Adam Page has a drinking problem?
And this is why he doesn't want anything to do with the Elite or Kenny Omega, because he's having issues and he's drinking and, yeah.
This is, I'm like, oh my god, are we really doing the rehash of the Scott Hall? Oh god, boy.
Well, anyway.
So MJF and Wardlow, I think we missed this.
No, we didn't. No, that was after this.
That was coming up next.
Okay.
Let's talk about this promo for a minute. So MJF comes out and he lists the stipulations for Cody to have the match with him at Revolution, which, by the way, I don't know if I told you guys, I will be attending that. But it's in the cheap seats, but, you know, so be it. So the three stipulations for MJF and Cody Rhodes to have their match. First of all, Cody Rhodes cannot touch MJF at all, which this is a callback to another WCW angle, if you recall, between Kevin Nash and you know, the Big Show.
Oh, yeah.
Before this match happens, Cody Rhodes must face Wardlow in a steel cage, which that's going to be the main event of some Dynamite. Probably the one on the Jericho Cruise, if I had to guess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that would be a way of just making sure that when the cruise have like a big main event that they can go home happy from or what have you. So
wait, hold on. Did I miss something? Wait. They're having an AEW on Jericho's cruise?
Yeah. I believe that's the idea because they're doing Miami next week. The cruise takes off, I think, 2 days after the show.
No. Miami's on the 15th. I think next week is Biloxi, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. We have the Mississippi show. Then we have the Miami Bash at the Beach show. And then after that is going to be the cruise episode, I believe.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's crazy. That's pretty cool, though.
So, and then the third stipulation is that Cody must consent to being whipped 10 times by MJF with a belt.
Who does he think he is? The fucking Sandman?
Right? Well, Cody Rhodes ain't no Tommy Dreamer, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is like, I don't know, like, I feel like MJF's just running out of material at this point. Like, it's just really, he just didn't come off very, like...
Didn't take fucking long for that to happen, did it?
Well, yeah. Well, and plus the camera angle, there was, like, no change in the camera. He was just, like, right up in the camera.
Yeah.
The whole time.
It was really weird, like, just Wardlow's just standing there, like, looking like a, like, and trying to look intimidating and, like... And Jay, I was just like, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't, it's not clicking with me right now with him. He's not inciting much. He's not like, he's just kind of, I don't know. This is kind of dull to me. I'm not very interested in this.
You know, I really think that there needs to be like, I mean, we're in 2020 now, and can we do more creative heel promos than just insult the city that you're in, you know?
Yeah, MJF, I think he's, it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't,
he seems the type who plays well, better off in promos when he has somebody to bounce back from, kind of like your back and forth type exchanges, rather than just being out there solo, trying to do soliloquies like he's fucking reciting Hamlet or some shit, or rather his scarf is reciting Hamlet, because Lord knows the man looks stiff as a board and just I don't know. Like,
well, that, I mean, his scarf is his gimmick, so, you know. But
it's very expensive, Jeff. It's like three figures.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had to flip a coin as to whether or not this was a good promo or not, and I'm still undecided.
Yeah.
I'm on the bad side.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm on the bad side of it. Yep.
Yeah, well, yeah, so be it. And then we have two more promos. I mean, this is a very promo-heavy show tonight. We have four promos in a row. We go to Jurassic Express, cutting a promo that I could not hear half of. And I have no idea what the hell Marco Stunt was trying to do.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I missed this. I was actually in the other room getting food.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, do you have any explanations? I have no idea what the hell Marco Stunt was trying to do the whole time, and I could not hear half the promo. Like, anything that Luchasaurus said, I had no idea what the fuck he said.
Yeah, the music unfortunately got... I guess whoever was in the audio truck hit that cue music about 5 seconds too soon, because it definitely cut into whatever audio they were having for the interview itself. I mean, Jungle Boy talked basically just on the whole looking to make it a big decade and stuff like that for Jurassic Express coming up. But then, yeah, we couldn't hear anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, everything else is inaudible, and I have no idea what the fuck... What was Marco Stunt's deal in this promo? I just don't know.
Unfortunately, I don't either, but you can tweet us either at Brazilian Fury, Strong Style Story without the E in style, or LOB _3, if you know exactly what happened in that and want to provide us with the details on it, we would appreciate it. Thanks.
And then we get one last promo for the evening, in which they attempt to interview Riho with Michael Nakazawa acting as interpreter, which I still think is like a whack gimmick. And then Britt Baker comes along and starts, you know, throwing, you know, all kinds of shade at Riho for not being there. You know, I'm here when you're not. Well, you know, maybe if you were touring Stardom, you wouldn't be there either, you know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, it's obvious they're it looks like they're pushing towards a heel turn for Britt, and they are trying their best to make Britt Baker happen still.
Oh man.
I guess it's fair, because really every company should be trying to make every wrestler happen, but
yeah.
You know.
It's just a circumstance where at this point Britt's been a 2-time loser. Like, unless you're going to pay this off with some sort of big angle where she eventually wins the thing and then, like, holds onto it like fucking Gollum holding the ring through whatever chicanery possible. It's just... unfortunately, it's a situation where I think they're trying to rectify all the stuff with Britt where things haven't been working as well, and rather than sort of ease off the throttle on the push, they're just trying to, you know, continue it, but under a slightly different direction. And I just don't know if the promo quality is not there from what we saw of the small sample size, and the match quality hasn't been there for really since the beginning of Dynamite. So I just don't know what to make of it, man. They have other girls on the roster that they can be using this time on, and Britt isn't it at the moment.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And it seems like that... And it seems like, you know, AEW's idea is, you know, oh, well, this isn't working. We'll just turn, you know, he or she heel.
Mm.
You know, and it's like the same thing that they're doing with the Adam Page thing, you know? Although, for some reason, the thought popped in my head of if Britt Baker does a heel turn and you know, wins the title, then... For some reason, remember DDP's heel turn when he won the title in WCW? Or I can't do it tonight, you know, that shit.
Mm.
You know, the Jersey Triad, anyway. Maybe, you know, forget I said anything. I'll take this out in post. Finally, our main event. A match I wasn't really thrilled to see on the on the booking sheet tonight, but here we are. Executive Vice Presidents Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson up against Pac, Pentagon Jr., and Rey Fenix. And
this was fun.
This was actually a really fun match, and I did not see too many people booing Pac, Pentagon, or Fenix. So maybe let's stop with the whole heel shtick. You know,
it was very intriguing, but then again, it is Jacksonville where they have their home base, so I'm assuming just the crowd in general decided, hey, we're going to be hot for everybody regardless. So I them going, oh, it's just a different sample size from some of the other towns that we're going to be running. But I just don't think that it's a situation where you have to be blatantly doing the baby face and heel converses every single time. I mean, granted, Pac is as heelish as they come, and that's fine. Like, that's the character that fits the character in and of itself. But again, with Penta and Fenix, we've emphasized this point already here for quite a few weeks. I don't want to go into it again, but I do think that they can do more with those guys than just shoehorn them into one corner kind of thing.
Yeah. And once again, I know that, you know, even with Excalibur on commentary, you know, the historian that he is, even though he still seems to think that Shima won Super Jacob, that they completely ignored the actually pretty large history between Kenny Omega and Pentagon. But
again, I think part of it is that they're probably saving a ton of that for when they encounter in singles finally, whenever that comes. But it for those who know the encounters that they've had in the past, and when you've had have a company that's made mentions of past encounters and the like, this one does look a little bit too egregious, I guess is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, it's just odd that they have this blind spot about that, even though that was like one of the feature matches on the show that, you know, really laid the ground for AEW. So, but, you know, what do I know? Was not a fan of this finish, though. Of go ahead.
No, you didn't like this? The Black Arrow and...
That I loved. I did not love Kenny, you know, pinning Fenix in this, because it seemed like maybe the Black Arrow should have been the finish.
Yeah.
The Black Arrow or the Brutalizer, because that would have advanced the whole rubber match thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, and then we're hypocrites if we say that, too, because we've been preaching that the Elite need to get more wins to be taken seriously.
Loris does have a point here.
We have? Because I don't remember saying that.
Yeah.
We have talked about this on the show before, at least not you specifically, but I know Lawrence and I have touched base on that at certain points. And I do get, at the very least, they protected the Black Arrow with the fact that it would have been a three had it not been for both the Bucks jumping in on the cover and actually stopping it. So
right.
I appreciated that much, at least.
They did the same for the Brutalizer, too, because, they did that, too.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Lucha Brothers are fine after this. I don't think it's going to kill them.
And I do like the fact that the way that the finish came, it wasn't like the usual fanfare of, you know, V-trigger spams. It was just one very precise one catching Fenix midair as a counter.
And that
was all the end of the finish.
Yeah, it wasn't like the whole, like, crazy amount of, like, super kicks and all that stuff. Yeah, this was more of a cohesive, just good match. Like it just wasn't like, it didn't feel like one of those PWG, like, spam fests that they have at times. And, no, this was like, I really enjoyed this a lot.
It's weird, like, seeing Kenny and the Bucks work TV-style matches with the appropriate time to do it, but they've been getting better at it.
I'll tell you what, too. Pac was a huge part of why this was so good.
Absolutely,
Pac's part in this was great. Actually, you know, all six guys in the match were actually completely on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, hey, let's have more of a prominent role for freaking Pac, please. Like,
yeah,
for the love of God, like, man.
Yeah, I think you know, hopefully, you know, they'll once we get past this whole Omega thing.
Yeah, that's a dude that is money for them, and that any company in the world right now would kill to have as part of their roster. Sans, you know, the ones that sent him away in the first place. So.
Right. Well, you know, it's just, you know, maybe if we, you know, once we get the inevitable Moxley and Jericho title match, if Moxley takes the title, then, you know, we can resume the Moxley Pac feud that was also threatening to
bubble it would be
up.
A natural progression. That would definitely be a natural progression at that point if that's the route that they're going.
Yep. But that is it for episode 13 of...
And I guess after the match, Cody came out.
Oh, right, and, yeah.
Right, and yeah, then Paige was, like, trying to get out of there, and they wanted Paige to come in there, and he was just, like, gave him a thumbs up.
No, I'm good.
He's like, I didn't do anything.
It's like, I don't want to be there, thanks, I'm going to go now, bye.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is really weird. This is Adam Page thing. I don't know what direction exactly they're going with this. I don't. This whole the booze thing was really weird, and I don't know. I don't know. I'm very very confused about this, but we'll see how it happens. I guess.
Yeah. One thing. Did you notice that neither of the cult angles showed up on this episode?
They had a Dark Order video. Basically earlier, but that was about it.
I missed that.
They did talk about what they did the prior week, and they were talking about a Grand Exalter as well, I believe. Evil Uno mentioned. So
a Grand what? Like,
so apparently, the way I interpreted it is they apparently have somebody who's bigger than the Dark Order tag team there that's basically calling the shot. So they're doubling down on the whole big cult thing, I guess.
It was me, Austin!
No.
My greatest fear is watch that be Brandi Rhodes and the rest of us just go off. Oh, fuck.
AEW should just like be ashamed of themselves if that's how. Oh my god. Oh, that would be so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, it would be so bad.
Well, I just thought it was kind of okay. Well, I didn't see that video. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that you know that neither cult angle was really a featured part of the show, considering that how much bullocking that AEW got for it a couple weeks ago.
And I figured the other part of it too is that not having Stat Leonard there, who's been kind of the major cog of this Nightmare Collective scenario, kind of played a hand on Brandi and Awesome Kong not being there this week too. So
yeah, but I mean, considering the title match, though, you think that they would have at least had eyes on it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm.
But you know, I guess that's what backstage monitors are for.
Yeah.
But all right.
What's up with this this Memphis show that's going to be happening?
Yeah, and how are you going to do a tribute to Memphis wrestling without Jerry Lawler?
Unfortunately, it's kind of one of those.
I mean, Jerry Lawler is a complete scumbag, and I could safely never see him ever again. But I mean, you're a dog about Memphis without Jerry Lawler. Good luck to you.
Well, yeah, that's understandable for sure in that regard.
It's... I mean, I assume the Jarretts will probably be around.
Jesus Christ.
Maybe we'll dig up Bill Dundee.
I was just thinking about him. Dig up the corpse of Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert.
Oh, hell yeah, now we're talking. I'm just like really curious about this. I'm actually really curious to see
film star, you know, noted Hollywood film star Dwayne Johnson began his run in Memphis as Flex Cavana.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I don't think he'll show up because of the WWE ties, but I'd love to see Jimmy Hart around too. I mean, first family,
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was rather odd. I was like, that was the first thing I thought. I was like, how do you do a show about Memphis without Jerry Lawler? But
yeah, without the one main guy behind the entirety of that was
guy that was the constant in that territory for decades. But anyway, pros and cons, Lawrence.
I mean, the show just started off with just three very good matches, and then ended with a great one. So, I mean, you can't really argue. how are you about the match quality on this show for real? I mean, even Guevara and the Dustin was pretty good too. I mean, I had no complaints about it. If, I mean, the show really felt like it breezed by, in general. And so I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of bad. I don't know. MJF, the MJF Cody thing just doesn't seem to be really catching the fire. I think that they wanted. The crowd just didn't seem very into that whole thing at all when MJF was doing it. Let's see. The Adam Page thing is very strange. Don't know exactly. I'm not on the con about it, but like the con side. But I'm just on the very unsure side because I'm just like not exactly sure what they're doing with that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of bad on this, to be honest. It's I mostly enjoyed this.
Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to say for pros, for sure, the match quality from start to finish on the show, they really rebounded, I think, from the Corpus Christi episode in which they took, ironically enough, they took some of the feedback that they got from sort of all over the place and went back to some of the basics in which AEW has done well, and it's been their wrestling matches for throughout these past 13, 14 episodes. So it was a really good return to form in that regard. Cons, mainly I was going to say just using an entire segment for that MJF Wardlow promo when they could have done it, I think is something that they could have gotten this particular message out exactly as to what they wanted done in a much faster, like, backstage segment and hammer this all information out without having to drag the extra 5 minutes of, like, an entrance and the crowd barbs and just all that other stuff. It feels like it was a wasted opportunity that they could have used to have another match in there, kind of thing. Beyond that, no major complaints, though. It was a really much better show than they had over the previous weeks, I feel.
I'm going to list a pro that neither of you mentioned. I actually liked the arena. I thought that it was a little bit of a different configuration, but they adapted well to it. And I thought it was, you know, it was a nice, it was a smaller space. You could tell it was a smaller space, but it kind of made it a little bit more intimate in that.
Yeah, I thought it was really neat. I liked it too. It was a really
cool
show.
I wouldn't mind if they do another show there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they did use it for Fight for the Fallen, I think, for the first time it was there since the cons owned the building. So this is their second going there, and they definitely did hammer out, I think, a few specifics on where to place the cameras and stuff like that compared to Fight for the Fallen. So they did a really good job in adapting to that venue itself, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get a couple more shows there just because it is Jacksonville, it is their home base, it is their own building for the ownership side too. So
I mean, how many home bases does AEW need? Because they were all saying that, you know, because the Bucks cut that promo at the Sears Center in Hoffman Estates saying that, the as far as they were concerned, that building was home.
I mean, Chicago's kind of, Hoffman Estates is that there is a spiritual home there in Sears Center. But with Jacksonville, it's literally, it is a home base because...
Yeah, well, that's HQ where the cons are.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Their HQ being there and them owning the building on top of it. So.
Right. Yeah, overall, I thought that the match quality of the night was on point, I thought. My biggest complaint would be the block of four promos in a row. It was kind of dragging things out, especially the MJF promo. I thought that it just went way too long, and it was a bit too rambling for, you know, what he, you know, these are the stipulations, so you should have a guide as to what you're saying and keep it on point. And plus, as I mentioned, the Jurassic Express promo, I have no idea what the hell half of that even was. So, but overall, this was a quality show, and it was a return to form from the first couple of episodes. So I was really glad to see that. Maybe they actually, after the Bucks flounced off of Twitter, and maybe they actually took some time and said, you know what, maybe we should take a look at some of these criticisms. Is this going to last? I guess we'll find out in the weeks to come. But we know what's happening next week.
Approach.
Yeah, we know some of what's happening next week in Biloxi, Mississippi. We saw, because we saw some match previews coming up, including the promised women's title match between Riho and Chris Statlander, which I really hope is a barn burner. But we also get a couple of tag matches, including, Adam Page and Kenny Omega up against Private Party. We get Dustin and Cody Rhodes up against the Lucha Bros, which actually I think that's a first time match now, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, so that ought to be, you know, even though I could see the booking coming from a mile away, but So
also your AEW Dark breakdown on matches, because there are announcements in that regard. So let me just run through them real quick. Don't want to expect next Tuesday. We have Awesome Kong versus Skylar Moore, which I guess it must be local Florida enhancement talent. So I guess Nightmare Collective stuff will happen there to build for the next Dynamite episode. So hooray for that. You have a SoCal Uncensored match against Angelico, Jack Evans, and Kip Sabian. And then a weird one, the Gun Club, Billy Gunn and Austin Gunn against Sean Spears and Preston Vance. So I guess this is where they're building the Sean Spears needs a tag team partner thing. So hooray.
Well, that sounds like a can't watch match. Lawrence, I know you're a big fan of at least one of the guns here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, gentlemen, plug yourselves.
You can find me at LLB_3 on Twitter. I actually got an interesting project coming up. It's not like a side project, but it's a Puro in the Rough side project, I should say. Me and Isaac are actually going to be doing a few interviews with some people that have either gone to Japan recently or are actually in Japan now for the late December, early January time of shows that, you know, around Wrestle Kingdom time. And we already got a few people on deck to talk to, and we're gonna get the whole scoop on like what they did there, what were their favorite matches, favorite shows, places they went to eat, interesting meetups, and you know, with wrestlers or people alike, and et cetera, et cetera. Something I've been really interested in doing is kind of want to get a different, like a fan perspective, from like a live perspective of these things. Isaac and I, we watch a lot of, you know, from our computer screens, but it's a different experience when you're there in person. So we're going to try to get like a different viewpoint from people that have gone there, and just in general, not just the wrestling, just being in there, like I said, with like food and sightseeing and everything else, whatever.
Sounds like a fun one. So, Chris.
All right. For me, you can find me at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of AZ. Both Twitter and Instagram for that. Like Lawrence, kind of have a particular side project in the wings that hopefully should be getting done by the end of this month. Me and my friend Jordan have been talking about getting this pilot done for quite some time. It's a project regarding podcasting about video games, but particularly focusing on soundtracks of video games. We are still trying to narrow down which one we're going to be doing first, but we're down to either Final Fantasy VIII or Donkey Kong Country 2. So either one of those. So just analyzing soundtracks on both of those, because it's one of the circumstances where I, with Jordan, DKC2 is what got him into video games to begin with, and Final Fantasy VIII, I think, has one of the better soundtracks of the entirety of the series, but it doesn't get talked about, I think, as much. But we'll figure something out for that eventually. Hopefully get that done by the end of this month of January and see where it goes. That's me.
You could find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel, 2 S's 1 L. And you can also listen to me at the Busting Balls podcast, soundcloud.com/busting-balls. My co-host and I just went through the midterm grades for the Premier League. So, you know, since we're at the halfway point of the season, let's see how every team did in their first semester of this season. So, one other side note, Chris and I are going to be making a special appearance on another show here on the fine Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. We joined Dave Ryan and Stagger Lee Malone of the Days of Thunder podcast, and we did the next edition of the Pick Your Poison, in which the four of us discussed 8 matches featuring one Mr. Le Champion, Chris Jericho. So stay tuned for that. That was a lot of fun, even though we had some technical difficulties towards the end. But, you know, it was fun times. And, of course, coming up soon, Chris and I ought to be doing a post-Wrestle Kingdom pre-Fantastica Mania Strong Style story coming up. So, and thanks to everybody who's listened to our 2-part anniversary show.
Yes, much appreciated.
So, guys, any last words?
I got nothing.
No, nothing at all. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks again for listening in.
Yep, we'll see you next week. Take care.